This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Twain Dooley is here. He has been known as Uncle Twain. He's been known as Funk Poet, but he has been really one of the Washington mainstays. And he's here with an opening poem. Here's Twain.
Everywhere I go, it's the same old thing. Spoons. Spoons are always stirring up something. They are always in knife and fork's business, talking about how knife just ain't cutting it no more. And fork has gone poking around on his own. It's getting hot. Equal is busy trying to take sugar's place. Broom is talking about how vacuum sucks. It's getting hot. Pot just called kettle a racial slur. And everybody acts like it's cool since they're of the same ethnic origin. It's getting hot. Something real fishy is going on in the trash. And I believe at any moment now, teapot's gonna blow the whistle. I never learned to trust crackers. They crumble too easily under pressure. And those of us who used to get along with everybody like cheese, we're now starting to grow hard around the edges. Something funky is happening in the refrigerator. Jello over there trying to play it cool. But everybody knows how shaky he is. And Ice, ooh, Ice thinks he's cool. Ice thinks he's slick. Ice thinks he's hard. But there's a whole rack of fools just like him, locked up in the deep freeze. Bunch of squares. Some people laugh because they got them plush living room lives. But me, I grew up in the hard, cold linoleum of the kitchen, where it gets real hot and I can't seem to find my way out.
Oh, Twain Dooley, now we know why you're on DC Slam Team for 10 years and why you have all those awards and how everyone knows you. That is terrific. People need to know that you didn't read that. So tell us about how you render that without forgetting what you're doing.
Well, is part of the writing process, you write it over and over and over, and you take stuff out and you put stuff back in and you keep doing it so often that you know 90% of it by the time the piece is finished.
We're at the Library of Congress with Twain Dooley, and he has performed with the Urban Griots, which were a very famous group. One of the first ones, I think, a first performing entity before DC Slam, I think. Am I right? Or do they come together?
They come together.
In the 80s. Together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he has been published in a number of journals and anthologies and hosts a reading at Busboys and Poets, which is the local gathering for the really interested poets. Okay, so we're going to hear another one, because when I heard you read this at the George Washington University, I said, oh, I have got to share this on the air. So give us phobia.
Okay. Dictionary.com defines phobia as an irrational fear. But I'm here to tell you that definition is as redundant as time clock. Fear is always irrational. Arachnophobia, fear of large breasts. Xenophobia, the fear of warrior princesses. Fear, I suppose, is one of those evolutionary thingies, like a spleen. This one kept us out of the mouths of saber-toothed tigers. But today, we have nothing to fear but people who are afraid of stuff. People who would shoot first and ask questions never. People who bury the light because shadows creep them out. Fear just doesn't add up. Arachnophobia, fear of Middle Eastern countries. Claustrophobia, the fear of fat magical elves coming down the chimney. For weeks, one October, every day, I walked past a pink flamingo tied to a telephone pole. Its one straight leg pointing to a herd of other stuffed animals and plants. This was one of those makeshift street-side shrines. This one was for Sonny. Sonny was a coworker who was murdered by the Beltway sniper. Every day, getting to work meant walking over the very spot where Sonny's body crumpled and fell, where only minutes before he had stood unafraid of the death that stalked him. And I have often wondered if the rest of us continued to go to work because we were more afraid of losing our jobs than getting shot. The truth is, Twain, you were never safe. Not when you lived in the hood, not when you were hit by that drunk driver, not when you joined the military. You were not safe, not when you moved to the suburbs, not because you put on a condom, and not when you got a desk job where Sonny worked. Fear makes no sense. Negrophobia, the fear of swollen leg joints. Now, I'm not suggesting that you run butt naked through Berry Farms screaming FDC, gentrification forever, but it's time you threw caution to the wind, even if it remains tied to a kite string. Better yet, if you really want to take flight, be that kite. Nah, be the wind. Everything else is painting yourself into a little dark corner of a life. A little dark corner where creepy, crawly things live. Things like spiders. The fear of spiders is called, well, nobody knows. And that's not important. What's important is to remember that fear is stupid. Homophobia, the fear of staying home. Necrophobia, the fear of necks. Or maybe the fear of death. Which is really silly, because life is, as life has always been, less predictable than a time clock.
That is Twain Dooley. And now you know what we're talking about. You know, humor is really just failed tragedy. So that at the basis of that, there are some very profound things going on. So do you start with a serious dream and riff off on that? Or does the funny start?
You know, no, I don't start with the funny. I'm really not that funny. I have tried to do stand-up comedy before. I've had comedians tell me that my timing is very good and I'm a natural and I should try, but I can't write jokes.
Oh, but you can tell stories.
I can tell stories.
Okay. What is there about you as a little kid who liked stories and liked to hear them and grew up telling them? What is there about Twain Dooley that makes him a storyteller?
I was always, well, like most writers, I was a big reader. I just read books all the time and got lost in them. And the strange thing about me is that as a child, I was really shy. I was really shy, but I was never afraid to stand up in front of people and read.
That was your protection.
That was my protection. I knew I could
read. You were
read.
Safe there.
Yeah.
And so you're safe here with us, too. We're at the Library of the Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Tell us something about generating the poem before you read it to us, about where you were when you thought of this poem and how it originated in your head.
Well, this next piece I'm going to do is, well, I have three children. The oldest of which is the girl. And, you know, the kids, they grow up so fast that you really don't have time to save up for a shotgun. And when you're a daddy and you say, well, you have all these things you're not going to let your daughter do. And when she becomes the age when she starts dating, it's really, really scary for fathers. And so to remind myself of what I was like when I was a teenager and I was dating, I wrote this piece to put it in perspective. So I wrote this. I call it Atomic Puppy Love, which is, you know, atomic dog. I don't know why I call it that. But anyway, this is what I was like when I was her age.
Uh-oh.
Somebody told me that your friend said that you might jive like me. Like me. But I gotta make the first move. And you probably think I'm smooth like Magnum P.I. or those guys from Miami Vice, but sometimes talking to a girl can be more complicated than solving a Rubik's Cube. Or maybe it's just you. I think you're more fly than Denise Huxtable. And when I try to talk to you, my brain gets all fuzzy like a Fraggle. So I stayed up late last night, real late, after they sang the national anthem and TV signed off for the evening. And I tried to write you a letter. It goes, "Dear dopest girl I've ever known, I've been scoping you out in Miss Holson's trigonometry class, and I dig the way your leg warmers always match your Izod shirt. Your asymmetric haircut is wicked cool. Plus, whenever you bop to whatever music you got on your Sony Walkman, my heart kind of pop locks. It break dances. It moonwalks. I think it's fresh out the box, the way you iron that crease in your jeans, so that it goes all the way up the back of your legs and over your butt. You got the look I want to know better. I tried to call you a couple of times. The first time, the busy signal just stuttered back at me. The second time, after waiting for all those zeros and nines to come gurgling all the way back around, well, I guess I just sort of lost my nerve. But I think we could have fun together. Wang Chung together. Maybe we can go to that new Molly Ringwald movie. Or just sit on the front step like little kids and share a pack of Now-Laters or Lemonheads. Life was so much simpler when we were little. But we're grown now. We're in high school. And nothing is the same. Letters cannot end with boxes at the bottom for us to check. So let's make the most of now, because we can't go back to the future, because nothing will be quite like this ever again."
Did you read that to your daughter?
You know what? She was in the audience at Busboys and Poets. I host the first Tuesdays of every month, and she was in the audience the first Tuesday this month, and I read it.
Did she like it?
You know, she hasn't told me whether or not she likes it.
Well, you have to ask her. Tell us a little bit more about how you find a story. Everywhere you look, I mean, at work, do you see stories?
Everywhere you look. Sometimes they're arguments. Sometimes they are somebody says something really funny or really stupid that you... One of the books that the Modern Urban Griots put together as a group is Everything I Never Told You Became a Poem.
I didn't know there was a book.
There's a book somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And Everything I Never Told You Became a Poem is just that. It's the things I wish I had said. If I was just really sharp, I would have said it at that moment. Then
that
we get back.
That is terrific.
We think about it later. We write it down.
Tell us what Busboys and Poets is.
Well, Busboys and Poets is a restaurant. And, you know, Andy Shalala has been opening more and more of them. I think he's up to six restaurants
now. But tell us
where
they got the name.
Well, the name comes from Langston Hughes, who was a busboy and poet. In fact, what's nice about the restaurant is that they each have a performance stage. They each have a room. So the original Busboys at 14th and V, the performance room is called the Langston Room. And it's for him. So a lot of us, I mean, we're not necessarily busboys, but we have day jobs and then we write. When I met Gwendolyn Brooks some time ago, and I was wondering if I should be a professional poet. Should I leave my day job? And should I do it full time? And she said most of the poems that we know her for, she was a secretary the whole time she had written them.
Right, right. And Lucille Clifton was raising five children.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
She probably never slept.
No, but she did some work anyway.
Yeah.
So let's hear some more of Twain Dooley.
So coming up here to the Library of Congress, I was remembering a job I used to have. Some time ago, I was a bicycle courier. And I used to ride around these streets all the time. They look so different now, but you were in and out of these buildings all the time carrying letters. And this was a long time ago. So This is the piece I wrote about being a bicycle courier.
Sounds dangerous.
It's the most dangerous job I ever had. And to put that in perspective, I was once in the U.S. Army. So, dancing to music in my head, headphones too dangerous, a madman's waltz with two-ton metal beasts echoing chants of withered dreams. I am a lunatic, a red light ignore, shortcut take a curb jumper, man on a mission, one way, wrong way, don't care, no fair. I'm out of here, echoing chants. I'm a circus performer, flying through traffic with the greatest of ease, a yellow line tightrope walker, a death-defying fool, flying feet, never touching ground. Heart race fast pace as I slip through tight space, fair has no place, echoing chants of withered dreams. Tour de France, Tour de France. I'm a madman. My world is powered by my thighs and riding on my back. I'm a Don Quixote challenging motor cars to battle a fool flying, refusing to slow down. Brakes, please, brakes are for cowards. Brakes are my savior. Fool flying never slows down except to enter another cold marble building, meet another receptionist, lady in waiting for her knight in wool suit. Will she try and peek at what I got poorly hidden beneath my pants or have her nose in the air? Oh, yo, sign here. I don't care. I spend my days out in the fresh air. The good ones are spent paying the rent and the bad ones are spent sitting in the park, sipping on beverages and reliving near misses and hours devoted to flying through traffic with the greatest of ease, echoing chants of aborted dreams.
Where were you in the Army?
You know what? I joined the Army as a reservist, and I was put on active duty for Desert Storm. That had been 91, but I was lucky. I am a administrative specialist. That's what we used to call a chairborne ranger. And so I never had to see any combat. They stationed me at Walter Reed Army Hospital, so that's not too bad.
What did you learn from being in the Army?
I learned that, you know, I learned a lot of things. I learned to take what's given to you. I've learned to make the most of it, and I've learned that you can die at any second.
But you didn't. Twain Dooley, you're here with us. And before we hear another poem, your autobiography, is that the truth? This autobiography, are you really writing it?
You know, yes.
What's the title?
None of This Makes Sense.
Is there something related to that title in there?
Well, you know, when I started writing, I kind of complained. I love Langston Hughes and I love Etheridge Knight. I think I really started deciding I wanted to be a poet after I had read Etheridge Knight. And what I found they had in common is they had difficult lives. And a lot of our favorite artists had difficult lives. And when I started, I thought maybe my life has not been so difficult. Maybe I've had it too easy to be a really good writer. And about a year after I had that thought, my youngest brother died of lupus. And I was working as a civilian in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And so I came for his funeral. And then I went back to be almost in exile. I felt in exile because I'm living in Cuba, away from family and friends, and trying to deal with the fact that my younger brother had just passed away. It was really, really difficult for me. And I had a lot of conversations with myself and with God, and none of them really add up to anything. So I've been really fortunate. As I said, I'm a war veteran who never saw combat. I've been really fortunate in other instances of my life. And
I don't think you have to suffer to write good poetry.
Good.
Yeah. And so let's have the rest of it be smooth for you.
Okay.
And before we do that, I can see you writing children's books.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Surreal ones. You know, children can get into that.
I love performing for children.
I bet. And so perform for us some more. Twain Dooley, I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress. We're getting everything out of him we can.
My love for you is as endless as politicians' promises and thicker than beltway traffic. A mere smile from you and I become the monument. Although you treat me more like the Jefferson, odd and pointless. Whenever you're near, my heart beats like go-go. It races like the first Monday in November. It screams like the awakening. I got more love for you than 18th Street has Ethiopian restaurants. I have more love than 16th Street has churches. I have more love than 14th Street has history. And even though you cast me aside like Ward 8, I shall return like a crack-smoking mayor. Camp out in your yard as though it were Lafayette Park, because my love is as tenacious as parking enforcement. We belong together, like the mall and museums, like the basin and cherry blossoms, like tourists and all of these things. And no amount of attorneys will ever convince me different.
That is a true Washington poem. It's more a monument than marble. What's the title of that one?
DC Love.
Tell me how you're going about writing your autobiography. Are you just sitting down and as something comes to you, you are just making a note of it and then elaborating on it? Because a memoir is like the tip of the iceberg. There's so much to say. So how are you managing to organize that?
Well, very poorly. I have thrown it out several times. But mostly mostly the stories that sometimes when I think about it in total, that I've lived 2 years in Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, that could be a chapter.
That's a chapter.
So the segments of your life. Hmm? Were you there during Gitmo, during the prison?
When I left, the Haitians were coming in. Actually, it was a lot of Haitian refugees on the base, and a lot of Cuban refugees were coming in.
You were on the Navy base.
I was on the Navy base.
Oh,
I was a civilian. I was working for McDonald's.
So interesting.
And when the refugees outnumbered the civilians by a certain number, a lot of dependents had to leave. So it was a sad time. A lot of dependents were leaving the base.
Did you live on the base?
I lived on the base, yeah.
It was hot.
Very.
Mm. But what do you think of it, generally, of Cuba? Did you get to see any of it?
No. Oh, no, yeah. You couldn't leave the base.
Oh, right.
We all were waiting for that time when they would just open up the gates. It's right across there. I could put antennas on my radio and get Cuban radio. I could put antennas on my television and get Cuban TV, but I could not go into Cuba proper.
Well, this is Twain Dooley, and I am Grace Cavalieri, and he's going to end with a closing poem.
Okay, since we know each other, I'm going to make a confession. I have been known to sing hallelujah in Sunday morning service with the club stamp still fresh on the back of my hand. But then again, it kind of makes sense. We have been dancing ever since the beginning of rhyme. We have danced across the Atlantic and through hard times. We have chopped cane to merengue rhythms in our souls. We have picked cotton to spirituals in our hearts. We have taken the red heat of struggle, mixed it with the white lack of hope, and created the blues. Right now, Grace, right now in my little island, Jamaica, there are people dancing who do not have a dance floor. Right now in my hometown, Washington, D.C., some kid is beating out his frustrations on the back of a bucket and calling it go-go. Right now, somebody, somewhere, is at a basement party, hands on hips, thanking the creator of blue jeans. and blue lights and blue magic. And I must have been about 12 when I first held Vanessa to my chest, synchronized my breath with her heartbeat with heat waves cooing always and forever. This is no random collision of atoms. This is by divine design. I got that epiphany when her right thigh brushed against mine. Right thigh, as if any thighs are ever wrong. And we danced. We danced this foreplay. We danced this afterplay. We danced when we were just playing. And we will continue to dance, just like we danced around Reaganomics. And we danced when Daddy didn't come home. And we danced when the rent was due. And we danced like our sanity depends on it. And we danced like there's no tomorrow, because there might not be. And my God digs this, because my God's got rhythm. I hear it when the raindrops plop-plippity on summertime pavement. I see it when the leaves do that shimmy thing in the spring. I know, because the snow be bopping and weaving on its way to earth. My God's got mad rhythm. And if I am created in its image, I gots to dance.
The voice of Twain Dooley. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by M.E.T. That's Mike Turpin. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. And we wish to thank our funders, the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.